If you want to move up a bit, we usually have a little smaller of a group for this program. So it's a little more intimate. You want to take a minute, and just introduce yourselves to the people sitting around you. I know everyone doesn't know everyone else. We just kind of share names, how your day's going, and we'll get started in just a minute. I'm about to start a holiday. I was like, okay. Okay, should we get started? Alaykum rahmatullah. Bismillah. Bismillah wa alhamdulillah. Wa salatu wa salam ala rasulillah. Wa ala alihi wa sahbihi wa man wala. So, there are a couple of other things related to Ramadan that we wanted to just go over so people could kind of get acclimated to them. And then kind of move on to a few other topics. So we have in Islam, just like in other religious traditions, celebrations and holidays that take place. And within the Sunni tradition of Islam, there's two main holidays that take place. There is a holiday that's at the end of the month of Ramadan. It's called Eid al-Fitr. And there's a holiday that is around the Hajj pilgrimage time. It's called Eid al-Adha. Has anybody heard of these holidays before? Yeah, great. So the month of Ramadan, which is the month that we're in right now, when it concludes on the first day of the next month, that's called Shawwal, is the holiday of Eid al-Fitr. And you want to be able to anticipate the holiday coming. We're going to celebrate it here at the Islamic Center on Friday, April 21st. So you remember last week, I talked about briefly how the start and ends of months are determined on the Islamic calendar, and that you have a local moon sighting or global moon sighting with the actual like naked eye. Somebody showed me the other day this really interesting way that they were teaching this to their kids' public school classes, using not like something that I think a Muslim person came up with, but maybe they did, and that's, you know, that much more interesting. But they have, like, using Oreos, they demonstrate like the phases of the moon, right? So utilizing like the outer cookie part of the Oreo to kind of distinguish kind of the phases of the moon as they're dark, and then kind of cutting chunks off of it so the white cream makes kind of the phase of the moon when it's a crescent or it's at its fullest, and these kinds of things. Which if we weren't fasting, I'd have us all do that. But for those of you who are not fasting, I'm fasting and I love Oreos, and I would be miserable watching you all eat Oreos while I can't eat them. So those were like the two traditional modes of determining the start and end of a month. And then a third mode of utilizing calculations, where people already are aware scientifically of what the start and end phases are of the moon in terms of kind of how it cycles through a crescent to a full moon and then back down again. So we already know that we're going to do here in our community on Friday, April 21st. We'll have prayers in the park right behind us near the arch. We do a really big brunch that's open to everybody. You're more than welcome to attend here if you can. And then we simultaneously do potentially a second celebration of Eid based off of also a local moon sighting opinion that primarily our Shia community adheres to, the Sheikh Faz Jaffer. We have opportunity to celebrate Eid here twice, potentially, if you'd like. But likely it's gonna all end up being on the same day, which is that Friday. But there's a potential of it being Friday and Saturday. Does that make sense? Does anybody have any questions on that? Because it tends to be something that comes up only around like holiday times, because nobody's really paying attention to things. Like I said last week, you wanna revive like as a practice. Islam is very much so rooted in kind of an elemental relationship with the world around you, right? So we're taught to like know our prayer times by a cyclical pattern of the sun, right? You are connected to water through making wudu, right? When you wash up for prayer. And so here too, like the moon cycles are things that you can only see the moon if you're looking at it, so to speak, right? So we're taught to engage nature in that way. If we didn't live in the middle of Manhattan, you know, we'd probably be able to do this a little bit differently. But maybe at some point, as now COVID restrictions are relaxed, we can start kind of like monthly trips upstate to have people go see if they could actually see the moon. But something you want to try to do and revive as a practice. And people do this all over the world. So with Eid al-Fitr, the first day of Shawwal, it's like an actual holiday. And if you all remember, for those of you here, like 3-4 weeks ago when we read the article called Islam and the Cultural Imperative, we were looking at how culture relates to Islam as a religion, right? And the fundamental argument in that paper, which was written by a convert who's a scholar of Islam, Dr. Omar Farouk Abdullah, he basically says, you know, Islam is likened to a stream, a river, something flowing as water, and the bedrock upon which it flows is culture. And so the water takes on kind of the hue and the color of the bedrock that it's flowing over. So too, Islam relates to the culture that it intertwines with in a way where it doesn't necessitate committing cultural apostasy, but it blends with the culture. So Islam in China looks Chinese, Islam in Malaysia looks Malaysian, Islam in, you know, Singapore looks Singaporean, Gambian Islam, Senegalese Islam, Turkish, Bengali, etc. Why is this important? Because you're not going to celebrate the holiday experientially in the same way as somebody who might come from a different cultural background to your own. And there's going to be Muslim people that you meet who they're going to say, oh, the night before Eid, like people all get together and they put henna on their hands and they do in South Asian culture what they'll call like a chandrat, which means just like moon night. You know, they're looking for the moon. But it's not that that is not a permissible thing to do. It's not like an absolute thing to do. Do you know what I mean? So if you went to people who are Muslim in China, they're probably not doing that, right? And it's more of a manifestation of how culturally people relate to something, but you want to be ready for that. So you're not in a place where there's absolutes that are presented to you and then it gets confusing. You know, you don't have to wear a cultural attire that's not your own on the day of Eid, right? You're going to celebrate it as your own kind of celebration. You also don't want to make your experience absolute, right? For those who it's your first time here, this is a class that we do that is for people who are trying to rebuild a foundational relationship with their faith, to be in a place where they're new to Islam or exploring Islam. So you kind of understand the basics of ritual, theology, spirituality, and just what it's like to live as a Muslim. What I love about our community is on the day of Eid, everybody comes out, right? And the weather, you know, thank God, alhamdulillah, is getting better, right? It's a little rainy today, but there's still benefit in that, you know, because you can imagine you were fasting and it's like 100 degrees outside, very humid. It'd be just a totally different experience. But I want you to think about like where we're seated right now and looking out of this amazing unobstructed view that we've been spoiled with of the park. That whole park gets filled with like 3,000 or 4,000 Muslim people, and they're all kind of engaged within the celebration of the holiday based off of who they are in their entirety, right? So everybody's not wearing like a South Asian shalwar kameez. Everybody's not wearing like Gulf Arab attire of long thobes, right? Everyone's not dressed in abayas and these kinds of things, or, you know, any kind of locale that you would think about. But you have people that are coming and in full force celebrating their identity, right? You see like amazing kind of colors from people in our community who are coming from a West African background. You see distinct modes of dress from people who are coming from Malaysia, Indonesia. You see just a lot of diversity because we have people in our community who are like Italian, who are Scottish, who are German, people who just see themselves only as American. And it's all blended all together. There's not a lot of gatherings that are like that that exist in the world. You know what I mean? And if you want to see how deep Islam can be, bigger than just your own experience with it, which doesn't mean that your experience is invalid, but it's not absolute. Do you get what I'm saying? Does that make sense? What we're gonna do, so you also ready yourself for it, if you're gonna celebrate here, is the way that we line up for our Eid prayer is, you know, I'll stand at the base of the arch. We have a sound system that goes back. And instead of having the men pray in the front and the women pray in the back, we have a separation that goes in the middle, and the men are praying on one side and the women are praying on the other side. It's also a completely legitimate way to pray your prayers. People will say, well, why don't we pray like that here? Well, it's more of like a confine of space than anything. But when we're out there and the park is ours, right? Because I'll talk about this in a little bit. But we're praying in the morning time. There's nobody in the park like that early in the morning. All the NYU kids are asleep because they're not waking up for class early. You know, none of the guys who sell weed are up at 8 o'clock in the morning selling weed. The people who are playing instruments, they're not, you know, like out there so early. So it's just like in a place of stillness. And you want to just come to see just how beautifully deep Islam actually is. I can't tell you that's what it's like in every community, but it doesn't have to be like that in every community, right? People can have their own cultural engagements, and many Muslim spaces tend to be deeply rooted also sociologically in shared race, shared culture, shared class. I'm not saying it's a good or a bad thing. It's just a phenomenon as to how we relate. So if you go to your local mosque in New York, where there's 200 mosques in New York City, you will likely find a majority of one cultural background, right? And I don't want you to think about that as a good thing or a bad thing. It's just a thing, you know? But if you come here, you're gonna find people from all different backgrounds that are going to be coming here, and they are going to be in a place where they're ready to celebrate. You want to also be in a place where you're ready to celebrate, right? It's a holiday. And what you're celebrating on Eid al-Fitr is everything that you've achieved in the month of Ramadan. You're in a place where you anticipate on the first of Shawwal, Ramadan is done. I'm looking back now at my growth over the course of this month. It's not in comparison to anybody else. It's not a religion that utilizes delusional senses of self in terms of introspection, superiority complexes that give false senses of grandeur, or inferiority that give delusional senses of insignificance. You're not in a race against the person next to you.
But it's more about me becoming attuned to myself. Interiority is the mode of introspection, and my growth, even if it's gradual, is still growth nonetheless, right? And so on the day of Eid, at the end of Ramadan, that's like a mode of celebration, right? You're in this place where you're like recognizing through the awareness that you have. What's gonna be really weird for a lot of you who are fasting this month is that on the morning of Eid, like, you're gonna eat something. And you're gonna have gone from so many days of not eating, or even if you had an exemption of fasting, it's still like there in the back of your head, right? Should I be putting this in my mouth or not? The whole idea with it being a holiday is also to not, in like a day, let go of everything you gained in 30 days by overindulging in different ways and now relenting fully to kind of a lack of self-restraint. Does that make sense? Right? Where we're just kind of going into a place where our celestial growth is now limited. It doesn't mean you shouldn't eat, but you want to have mindful eating, you know, mindful sharing of sweets and gifts and all these things that are still rooted in an element of gratitude, right? So every bite you're taking of something is to still have awareness and consciousness of it. You know, how did this come to me? Where did it come from? And one of the things that you'll find that in Islam, a lot of the ritual and practice is also deeply attached to elements of social cohesion and social equity. It's not like a private religion, the way people think about religion in a personal sense, but it's a religion that also teaches you to be connected to those that come from different backgrounds than you. So on the day of Eid al-Fitr, one of the things that you do prior to the holiday is you give a particular charity that is called Zakat al-Fitr, or some people will call it Sadaqat al-Fitr. And essentially what this is, it serves like two purposes. Prior to the day of Eid, each person who has like wealth and means, per person in your family, you're going to give this particular charity, and it's given to people who are in need within your kind of local community, ideally, but can give it really to anybody who's in need anywhere, right? The idea being so that they have a means to also celebrate the holiday. It ends up being like $10 to $15 per person in your family, right? So you do the math. If you have like 5,000 people just in this community, or there's a million Muslims in New York City, and let's say of the million, right, half a million of them are giving this $10, $15 per person, right? That's $5 to $7.5 million by itself, let alone the other aspects of charity that we'll talk about probably next week. But for the purposes of our conversation, the holiday is also celebrated by engaging people who are in need, right? One of the first things that you are required to do if you have the wealth and means to do so is to engage in an act that is mindful of the fact that there's all kinds of people who celebrate this, inclusive of people who don't have any money. They don't have wealth, right? Does that make sense? The other reason that this charity is given is as a means of expiation for any shortcomings that somebody might have in their month of Ramadan, right? So the way that, for example, we haven't talked about prayer yet, and we will, but like the extra prayers you pray, like outside of what's obligatory. If you remember, we went through the different categories that acts can be placed in. Obligatory is fard, right? You have what's recommended, mustahab. You have what's neutral, mubah. You have what's disliked, makruh. And you have what's strictly prohibited or haram. You have, I forgot what I was talking about. What was I talking about? Huh? That's the only word you remember? Oh, man.
For anything that you did wrong during
Ramadan. Oh, yeah. So when you're praying, right, you have obligatory prayers. And the recommended prayers They also serve as a means to fill like inadequacies in your obligatory prayers, right? So we're taught, for example, when we stand in front of God and he assesses our prayers, one of the things that he'll tell the angels to do is look to the extra prayers to compensate for inadequacy in the obligatory prayers, right? So the idea with this charity is twofold. One, you want people to also celebrate the holiday wherever they are. And two, that it serves as a means of recompense for anything that was deficient in your own like practice of Ramadan. Does that make sense? Yeah. What happens now on this day? Are you coming? This is Kareem Gabriel Latif, dressed with a Mega Man jacket on. Why are you looking so shy and embarrassed? Kareem is my son. He's not a random child I have come into interaction with. You say salam alaikum to everybody? You need my computer? Where is the adults in your life that you just walked into this room? Is anybody else here? Yeah? Okay. Here, you can take this. Got it? I'm glad we got to spend this time together. What just happened? So okay. I have a 7-year-old and a 10-year-old who from tonight through next Sunday, they're on vacation. So you'll probably see them running around here a lot. So what happens on the day of Eid is gonna vary from person to person. My strong recommendation, whether it's your first time, you're still learning about Islam, you've experienced Eid like for years in your life, you want to celebrate the holiday as if it's a holiday, right? And as you're prepping right now, allowing for yourself to think, even if the people in your life are not Muslim, you have family members who are not Muslim, you have friends who are not Muslim, there's nothing that restricts you from giving gifts on your holiday. Right? You can spread love through the giving of gifts. You are in a place where it cements relationships and allows for people to experience things in a different way. When you are in a place where sometimes you'll go to some communities, they don't know how to celebrate, and it's like very miserable. Inshallah, it won't be miserable for us. But the way that the day of Eid starts is after Fajr time, which is the first prayer of the day, right? At sunrise, like true dawn, you know? This is when you stop eating in Ramadan, right? That's kind of the mark there. And we have the second prayer of the day, Dhuhr. In between these prayers, there's going to be the Eid prayer. The Eid prayer is a little bit similar, but still different from if you've ever attended a Friday prayer service in a Muslim space, where you have a sermon plus a prayer, but the sermon precedes the prayer on Friday, right? How many of you have ever been to a Jummah prayer on Friday before, by a raise of hands? Yeah, great. Some of you haven't, some of you have. So on Eid, it's different in that the prayer precedes the sermon. And there's a distinct kind of set of mechanics to the prayer for the Eid prayer that'll vary slightly from community to community based off of some nuanced opinions on how the prayer is conducted. But it's pretty much the same that in each standing of the prayer, you have an additional set of what's called a takbir. The person leading the prayer will say Allahu Akbar, and you'll raise your hands kind of up at that moment. And then the prayer will kind of continue and ensue in the way that it is. But it'll be explained to you wherever you go to pray the Eid prayer. Following that, there'll be a sermon that takes place that will have two parts to it. And then after that, you're going to have a lot of people that just start hugging each other, right? And you want to be ready for that. The person next to you will likely turn to you and then just give you a hug, even if you don't know them. And you don't want to be caught off guard. That's just the way that people kind of celebrate on the day of Eid, right? And Muslims have a lot of challenges around race and culture and class, like any community, but there's certain moments where they just come together in a really beautiful way, right? Like when I'm traveling, there's been numerous times when I'm going from New York to a place that doesn't warrant me taking a plane, and I'll drive down to like Washington, D.C. or to Boston if I'm not taking a train and I have people with me. And numerous times I've stopped at rest areas to pray, and random people join me in the prayer, right? The way we have our five daily prayers. Has this ever happened to anybody that you're praying someplace and someone just comes, not in a prayer space, but you're like outside praying and someone comes and joins you in prayer? Has that ever happened to you? It has happened to you? How do you feel when that happens?
Happy.
Happy, right? You're not ever like, oh man, I'm in prayer and some random stranger is behind me and what's about to happen here? But you always feel good. And it's unique in our religion's experience that random strangers can meet just in that moment and join each other in prayer and feel elated at the fact that someone that I don't know and will never likely meet again, we interacted in this moment and it brings joy to my heart, right? That's like a pretty interesting phenomenon. Similarly, at the end of the Eid sermon, the khutbah, random strangers are gonna start hugging you, right? Like if you are a convert in this room and you've converted in our community, at times when there's a gathering of people around you, people just come and start like giving you hugs and stuff. They're just happy, right? You know, you don't have to. You could like say, I need my space, you know what I mean? But fundamentally, that's something that's gonna happen. It's like meant to be a joyous celebration, you know? What we try to do here is create opportunities throughout the day for different groupings of people to interact with each other. But you wanna be mindful, especially if you're in this room as somebody who's born into Islam, that you're sharing a space right now with people exploring Islam or people who are recent converts to Islam, or maybe they converted a long time ago, what experientially it also means to be the only Muslim in your family on a Muslim holiday, and where and how you are purposely creating opportunity to ensure that no one is also celebrating a holiday by themselves, right? And this becomes an experience for many people. Alhamdulillah, not so much in our community at this center, but in many Muslim communities that now share culture as a common source of bond or class as a common source of bond, they're not necessarily thinking that that person that I jumped up and down for and hugged when they converted, they also probably need to be invited somewhere to celebrate the holiday, right? Do you get what I mean? So you want to think for yourself, like, how will I play a role in ensuring that there's opportunities for people to engage in this? What are things that people do? There's not like a lot of things that Muslims do other than eat, right? You know, we're not like doing so much other stuff that, you know, you'd be like, yeah, you're gonna go out and do this, you're gonna go out and do that. So people spend the day quite often interacting with friends, they're eating with friends. Gifts don't have to be lavish, you know what I mean? If you come here, there's gonna be like kids probably that are praying with us. You buy bags of candy and just give it to little kids, right? You saw my son, if you came up to him, he has no concept of like stranger danger, you know? So you give the guy like anything, he's gonna like be sticking it in his mouth as he's asking me, is it okay if I can eat this, right? But it's a holiday. So you want to allow for people to be creative in their celebration of a holiday. Do you know what I mean? Does that make sense, right? And it makes a big difference, you know? But to think about that as you're navigating some of it. So what I'd like for you to do is just turn to the person next to you. How do you anticipate celebrating on the day of Eid? What does that day look like for you as of right now? Ideally, right? And you don't want to be in a place where you're kind of, you know, it's your first time or you don't know. But what do holidays, like, what should they feel like? What should they look like experientially? And then we can kind of come back and discuss. Do you understand the prompt? Okay, so what should it be like on the day of Eid for you, for anybody who's coming, and then we'll come back and speak about it a little bit. But go ahead.
This year, just like having community, I definitely want to be here. Last year, I did have community with my local masjid, and I went to my local masjid seed, and it was okay. The second year was a different story for Eagle Fitz. It was okay, but it's definitely uncomfortable. And afterwards, my friend drove me home, and I just came home and I was like, oh, that's it. It was really hard. So that's why this year I'm like, yeah, I have to spend the day. Like, I'm like not leaving here. I'm not going home. I'm like spending the day. Yeah. I'm not going home because my friend drove me home and I was like, what do I do now?
So my friends feel a bit awkward with like, there's no people around and then, okay, I'll just go to work. And I was like, why go to work?
Why go to work is me?
What are you planning? Is it your first day? And then they were like, so we pray down here. So this is that I said, it was like after people came up. So it was like less than a lot of people. We already started to come up, and that's why one of my
friends also noticed, like, they didn't put anything like on the board, but that makes sense.
Yeah, you can just bring the prayer mat.
Yeah.
And and then we went up here.
Because it's also a Friday this year, is there a Shabbat prayer?
Yeah.
So that's good. So that's
right,
of course.
But
yeah,
it's
an Eid prayer and then Shabbat prayer?
So
I guess
he's the two different
sounds. So maybe it takes place.
Okay, so what are some of the things you're talking about? How do you foresee like that day looking for you? It's a holiday. Like how would you feel like you'd celebrate it? What did you discuss? Who wants to start?
We talked about henna.
Henna?
Yeah.
Yeah, great. What about it?
Like wearing it, like having the little design and, you know.
Why is that enjoyable?
A form of celebration.
Yeah. Yeah, great. It's a fun thing to do, right? What else?
For me, it's really like embracing people that day. You know, getting to hug, getting to celebrate. Lots of embracing.
Amazing. Yeah, I stand at the arch, and it's like a line of like strange men I've never met in my life. Just all come, start giving me hugs. My kids get annoyed. They're like, "How many people are you gonna do this with, Bubba?" I'm like, "Well, there's 4,000 people here." And you think, I'm a small guy, right? Like it's not, you know, it's you know, it's nice, I guess. Yeah. What else? What do you do to celebrate the holiday? Yeah.
Eat some good food, exchange some gifts.
Yeah. Anything else? Yeah.
I mean, not really. Every year, I spend like 2 hours on traffic to go eat with the people.
Uh-huh.
Everybody has an opinion of where we should go, and then nobody does, and then it takes about 2 hours, and eventually you go somewhere.
Yeah. Any other thoughts?
Like we visit family.
Visit family, yeah. If you can do that, that's a nice thing to do. It's just like any other holiday, you know? And you want to treat it in that way. We start our prayers here probably like around 8 a.m. or so, 9 a.m. maybe, depending if it was on a weekend or not. You can do this anytime between these two prayers. When I was growing up, they'd pray this at like 6:30 in the morning sometimes. And I would be like miserable, half asleep. And my dad's like, "We gotta run to go do this." Everyone's also super exhausted. We're not doing that. Why we would start at 8 It's just because there are some people who have to get to work. They don't have the option of missing work that day because of the nature of their job industry, right? And so it's a privilege to have the ability to take a day off from work without getting penalized in a way that you could even get terminated from your job, which is all the more a reason as to why, if that's not your reality, you should be taking the day off for your holiday, right? Because there's a ton of people who would love to do that, but they're just not set up in roles where that's like an option, you know? And so any other thoughts on like how to celebrate, things you could do? It doesn't also have to be in large numbers, you know? It can be in very small scales. You get groupings of people together. You find different people. We typically do some things for the converts in our community where they'll have like a picnic in Prospect Park or meet up for lunch or dinner. Our broader community, I think, will have a couple of events that'll be like larger scale or smaller scale. But you're also able to just kind of think about proactively how to do that for yourself. And it's hard, right? Because the ideal is that, well, someone would have thought to include me in something, but to shift the paradigm to recognize, hey, if there's not something that I've been invited to, there's probably thousands of people literally who haven't been invited to something. So let me kind of start up what needs to be done. And if any of you have ideas that you want us to amplify, just let me know, as long as like they're not crazy things, right? We were gonna, at one point, because we didn't know where we were gonna do and what COVID protocol was. So one of our potential venues to fit people was we were gonna rent out Webster Hall on 12th Street. I don't know if people know where Webster Hall is, right? What's Webster Hall? You're like smiling back there.
It's a music venue?
Yeah, it's like a club, you know? So, you know, we were gonna have Eve in a club in Eden Square. But like it fit us and it was empty. But we're gonna, inshallah, do it in the park here. But if you were like, hey, you know, can you advertise this like Eid party that's happening late night at this club? I'm like, no, I'm sorry, we can't do that because I'll get fired and people will be really upset with me. But within reason, if there's things that you have that you feel like will create opportunity that has whatever limitations, you want to get like 10 people together, it could be 10 people. You have a place that could fit 1,000 people, it's 1,000 people. But things that we could help to amplify. But you yourself individually should be ready to celebrate the holiday. It's a holiday. And think about also, within whatever capacity, that you're just spreading like joy to people because it's a holiday, right? So the people who are in your lives, inclusive of those who are not Muslim, that are your family members, your relatives, there's nothing that restricts you from being able to extend the celebratory nature of the holiday to them. Do you get what I mean? Does that make sense? Okay, so how the day will lay out here, because there's a particular to it, because it's a Friday, right? And so you're gonna go from an Eid prayer to now, instead of Dhuhr, like there's Jummah prayers, there's Friday prayers. If you look at books of Islamic law, they'll say if you attended the Eid prayer and khutbah, you don't have to go to Jummah that day, right? If anybody has to go to Jummah that day, it's the person that delivers the khutbah. That's me, right? It's not you. So I would be required to do both things, right? Yay for me. But where you're in a place where you contextualize that, the reason as to why one would be like exempt from attending the Friday prayer, if the Friday prayer is on the same day as the Eid prayer, is because everybody came from everywhere to celebrate Eid together, right? The way many communities were set up, you'd have small mosques and then you'd have a Friday mosque. And then the small mosque would be empty on Fridays during Jummah time, the Friday prayer, because all the people would go from the little mosque to the big Friday mosque. The same way the small mosques would have everybody to come and pray in the Friday mosque, all the Friday mosques would get together in an area and everybody prayed Eid together. Meaning if somebody was coming to Washington Square Park to pray with us, they were coming from miles away. And so for them to have to also stick around or get to it, the idea was they already had one sermon that day
and their distance from their locale, because everybody's coming together, doesn't then require them to have to kind of go to a second one. Does that make sense? We're going to have Eid prayers here, and then we're going to have Jummah prayers here, right? I would love for you all to join me, so I'm not the only one in the room. But it's usually also like filled with people, because people want to continue to stick around, given just the vibe that's here is very upbeat. And you'll see a lot of people taking pictures. People are going to be eating brunch together. And they're not looking for a reason for it to stop. They want for it to continue. But on the nuance of that, like, that's where somebody might tell you, oh, I heard if Eid is on a Friday, that you don't have to go to the Jummah prayer. Well, it's based in that ruling. Does that make sense? Right? It's a holiday also. So the idea is that there is unique blessing to the day. And just like many Muslims, for however many of the last nights of Ramadan have been like praying at night and doing these things, praying in the night before Eid is also an important thing to do, right? Making dua in that night is an important thing to do. Engaging in acts of charity and these kinds of things. And it's very particular to understand in the spiritual tradition of Islam that with immediacy at the end of the month of Ramadan, people now have an opportunity to choose choices based off of what they learned they had capacity to do in the month that is inclusive of prayers and fasting and whatever else ritualistically, but also the capacity to just have like self-restraint, to be mindful in your actions, that doesn't suddenly now stop or get muted at the end of the month. And that first night and how you spend it is important, because you don't want it to be something that foregoes what it was that you had kind of gained from in the 30 days and 30 nights prior to it. Does that make sense? Yeah. If you can't be here with us, you're traveling, you're going elsewhere, you know, you're not able to come at 8, 9 in the morning for something, all is reasonable, and you're trying to find spaces to go to, let us know and we can try to connect you to some of these other places. Does that make sense? Okay. I want to be mindful of the time, because we had a couple of people that were going to take their shahada today. They were going to formally convert to Islam. And so what we'll probably do is, unless people have questions on this more, we'll start to gradually just make our way up. We're not like one floor above today as we normally would be, but we are going to be on the 10th floor of the building next door. But you don't have to exit the building to re-enter that building. The buildings connect on this floor, but it's still going to just take a little bit of time to get everybody up there. And we told two people that we kind of do this around 7 o'clock. So if people are okay with us taking a pause here, unless there's any questions or anything that's coming up for people, right? The whole idea is one to introduce that, like, there are holidays in Islam that everybody celebrates. These two holidays, there's other holidays that come up as well. In the Shia tradition of Islam, there's like a lot of holidays that take place. But these are two main holidays that every Muslim celebrates. We'll talk about Eid al-Adha, the other one, in a later kind of class or session. But we're halfway through Ramadan, and so you want to just start anticipating now as best as you can, like, how you're going to spend that day of Eid in a way that is celebratory. How do you create opportunities for celebration also? Does anybody have any questions or any comments on any of this? Yes, no?
Is there any association that we can send the second fitr to?
Yeah, so we're going to send out an email to the whole listserv where you can online just contribute it. Members of our community have set up a separate nonprofit. It's called the Zakat Fund of New York City. They sell right now support 800 families in need in our community, and it'll be distributed to them. If you were here like throughout the pandemic, you know, they were kind of our partner institution. We're issuing micro cash grants to people facing food insecurity, homelessness, survivors of abuse that were now stuck at home with their abusers in the pandemic, you know, people with funeral assistance needs. Within that, there's kind of an open application for people to apply for charitable assistance. And this is a big part of like just Islamic tradition, you know, that you have awareness and consciousness of how the community kind of at large is experiencing certain things. Do you know what I mean? And this is how like a Meccan society drew its sense of strength from, right? The idea that the kind of strength of a kind of tribalistic society, a clan-based society, was a clan's power was rooted in ensuring that the most underserved and underprivileged members of their clan had their needs taken care of, you know? And some of that principally carries over to Islam in a like pre-Islamic mindset. You're still bringing in what's virtuous, right? The healthiness of a Muslim community is that it's also taking care of those that are underserved and underprivileged within that community space, right? And that's one of the reasons why we fast for some of us, is so that you can understand that there's people who are involuntarily hungry all the time, but a benefit for our hunger, which is voluntary, is that we can recognize some of the difficulties that people go through. And then purposely built in, right? God creates a ritual that says, at a minimum, you're gonna give this thing so that other people can also celebrate the holiday in ways that everyone should be entitled to celebrate the holiday. Does that make sense? So we'll send out those things via email, like in the last week of Ramadan. And all you gotta do is like click a button and it'll go, and then it'll get distributed in cash, in checks to some of these people who are in need, right? And just like think about that, you know, as you're praying with people, breaking fast with people, understanding there's a plethora of experiences that exist, that these are just 800 families doesn't mean 800 people, but people that have children, people who are widows, people who are undocumented, people who are refugees, people who lost their jobs at some point and just were never able to find work again. They're all still living in New York City, where they have to pay like New York rents and buy like New York food and all this kind of stuff. So with a lot of love, you want to like give with an understanding that it'll go a long way in helping somebody who on the other end of it has to deal with the fact that like, how will I help my kid to celebrate their holiday when we don't have anything, right? Like you're literally facilitating for that family to be able to celebrate in a meaningful way. Does that make sense? Yeah. Any other thoughts or questions before we break? Yeah. Does anybody here know how to get to the 10th floor of the building next door? Great. Can you raise your hands really high? Okay. So if those of you with your hand raised, just look for them if you don't know how to go. And if those of you who know how to go, just linger in the hallway. And then they'll guide you to the 10th floor. So you're gonna grab your stuff and your shoes and we'll make our way over there. And then kind of reconvene on the 10th floor of the building. Next door.
I know, go ahead, listen up.